Hi, welcome to the 12th House Tomfoolery Podcast, day 3 of the 12 days of tomfoolery. Say hi to the people, Woo-hoo. Kate.
Hi, guys. How are ya? I love that I just asked that as if like people could respond.
Yeah, I'm just sitting here actually, waiting.
Which is actually a good, unintended, but intro into what we're going to be talking about today. So it is the third day. We are moving into the third house, which is ruled by Gemini. It is the house of our early upbringing, our early ways of how we learn to communicate, communication in general, short travel, siblings. But Gemini as a sign is ruled by Mercury. It's the twins. There's a lot of duality within Gemini, but there's also a lot of really mercurial, quick wit, very usually good communicators, very dualistic in their nature. But it definitely is a house that deals with how we deal with our community and how we communicate to others. And Geminis are usually very good with words as well. As our Virgos, we're both ruled by Mercury. So that's what we're going to be focusing on today. And Tiffany, what do you want to get us started off with?
Today, I'm going to be talking about the history of caroling a little bit. Thought that'd be fun.
So fun.
So, yeah.
And I'm really excited because I have no idea why caroling is a thing. So educate me.
I literally didn't either until a little bit earlier. Normally, I do a little more research, but I found a few different articles. And then just this is the one that I thought would be more fun to listen to. So we're just keeping it light and sweet for the holiday season. So according to this article, there is no definitive history behind caroling and Christmas caroling. Where they originated, who wrote them, and how they evolved is unclear. Caroling is an oral tradition passed down from generation to generation. Carols commemorating the Nativity or the birth of Jesus Christ were purportedly first written in Latin in the 4th and 5th centuries, but they didn't become associated with Christmas until the 13th century. Saint Francis of, and I'm going to do my best here, Assisi, the Roman Catholic saint of animals and environment, is often credited with incorporating the upbeat Latin hymns into the Christmas services. So
upbeat
the energetic
Latin hymns?
I know. I'm
is that
like,
what you said? Remix! Sus. Like, up is this like DJ Khaled coming in? Like, upbeat Latin? Like,
I just think it was upbeat for boom, boom, boom. Boring white people in Catholicism in the 13th century. So
I agree, but I'm in sure my brain forever, it's going to be
any type of rhythm. They were like, oh my goodness.
Yeah. Well, for me, it's always going to be Christmas caroling by DJ Khaled. It is forever in my brain now, but yes. All I do is win.
His name over the name of the song.
Khaled. Yeah. Yep. Deck the halls with what? Holly, what?
Yeah. You're triggering my dog asking him bark. Hold on.
Sorry.
All right.
Communication. We're communicating. Gemini.
We're communicating.
Boom. Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, I'm going to go back into my topic. So DJ Khaled, I guess.
100%.
Anyway, so upbeat Latin rhythms and hymns.
Yeah. Miami the Club Night, Latin.
But make it Catholic. The energetic, joyful carols were sung in the sharp contrast to the somber Christmas music of the day. So the concept of Christmas carols and spreading them to the community to celebrate Christ's birth is thought to have spread across Europe. Today, many caroling groups sing for charities and churches and in neighborhoods. And some historical accounts claim that this is rooted in feudal societies when poor citizens would sing for their supper. So they would do things in exchange for food or drink. Another theory is like that carolers traveled door to door because they thought they were not originally allowed to perform in churches. Others say this idea didn't develop until the 16th century when the Anglo-Saxon peasants adapted these pagan customs when they went wassailing, requesting nourishment for their superiors in exchange for singing and good tidings. Wassail is a thick, hot spiced beverage that helped keep the traveling well-wishers warm. So mulled wine, anything you want to think of in regard, like, this is just...
Butterbeer from Harry Potter. That's what comes to my mind.
I'm just going to have to gloss over that because I will get lost in it. But yes, the drink was just as much of a holiday tradition as eggnog is in modern times. As wassailing involved, when with children often going door to door, it became associated with Christmas and caroling. Oliver Cromwell banned Christmas celebrations in England from 1649 to 1660. He believed Christmas should be a serious holiday and celebrated accordingly. So, caroling did not experience
a surge in popularity. He should listen to our first episode where we talk about how Christmas was started as a drunken frat party. Check yourself.
Shoot back if you got lost and if you're not going in order. Check it out. Yeah. Until the 19th century, when it was thought that the expressive hymns were well received in the Victorian era. A common legend says that Christmas carols are named after Carol Poles, an English girl who went missing in London during the holiday season in the late 19th century. Yeah. People supposedly searched for her by going door to door singing to declare their good intentions. Although it may be a nice story, it actually has no factual basis. Hundreds of Christmas carols have been penned over several centuries, but only a few have achieved legendary status.
I just have to interject. When you said that, like, that's a great story, but no basis in reality or whatever, something like that. That is, and I'm not trying to dog on Geminis. I love Geminis, but every sign has a really toxic, energy associated with it, all of them. And good Gemini is like one of my favorite energies, but bad Gemini is like one of the most toxic. And I feel like saying that, like, great story, but no basis in reality, is so Gemini. Because when they're in their like toxic thing, it's like they're so good with words. They're so creative and they'll just spew out shit that you're like, what the? No, that's not. There's no basis in reality for that. But they're great storytellers. So that's very toxic Gemini energy. But the rest of it is positive Gemini energy. It's great.
Awesome.
Also, another just little input from me. Mm-hmm. I'm really glad I was not alive at this time period, because if I was trying to like make my food or like get my sustenance from going from house to house singing, I would have been a very hungry girl. Like, very hungry. People would have been like, get the fuck off my lawn, you dying cow. What are you doing? I can't sing for shit, so.
It's tough out there for our tonal homies.
Yeah, for our tone deaf homies. 100%.
So just to seamlessly slip out of what you're saying back into the carols.
That was very sexy. Okay.
I just said it real slow so that you wouldn't cut me off. So sexy.
And then I did anyway, right?
It's okay. It was still sexy. Silent Night might be the most sexy song of all time. Just kidding. Is considered by some to be the most famous Christmas carol. So Silent Night has varying legends behind its origin. The most famous being the legend, which involves Austrian priest Joseph Mohr, M-O-H-R. Who composed the song?
Thank you for clarifying.
I just don't want people coming for me in the comments. I'm like, you know what? Actually, I do. Say it with your chest. Go to the Facebook page. Fight me.
Yeah, communicate.
Who composed the song with friend Franz Gruber on Christmas Eve, despite the fact that their church organ was broken. So, Silent Night, translated as Still Nacht, not in German, was written in time for the church's midnight mass in the Bavarian town of Oberndorf. Pardon. While the details of the story are unclear, some believe that parts are embellished or altogether untrue. Moore and Gruber are credited with adapting Silent Night, originally a poem written by Noor, into a legendary Christmas carol.
And I like that it's called Silent Night when their organ is broken, right? Like, that's nice. Very apropos.
So I have several more little cute little factoids about carols, but do we want to continue? Or Kate, do you have some little fun info for me?
I mean, you can continue. Mine was pretty quick. So if you want to continue, you can continue.
You know what? Then we're just going to go rapid fire on these. I'm going to do the fastest version possible.
Yes.
So 12 Days of Tomfoolery. Let's do the 12 Days of Christmas. The carol has roots in 18th century England as a memory and forfeit game sung by British children. One theory, however, believes that the carol was a catechism song for Catholics to learn the tenets of their faith, as they could not openly practice in Anglican society from 1558 to 1829. There is no substantiative evidence that this was the case, nor is there any evidence that the verse symbolism contains anything uniquely Catholic. Quick fire time. O Tannenbaum, also known as O Christmas Tree, this original carol started in Germany, perhaps in the early 19th century, but the exact roots are unknown. While the hymn pays homage to what has become the universal symbol of Christmas, its melody is mimicked in the state anthems of Iowa, Maryland, Michigan, and New Jersey.
Michigan, really?
Yeah. Oh,
I'm going to have to listen to our state anthem. I didn't know that.
Double check. Wow. I know. I was waiting for you to be like, wait a second. So I just have two more carols real quick.
I'm not so pro-Michigan that I'm like, oh, the Michigan anthem? Yes, we are a mitten. I'm not going to go on, but I don't know it is the point.
So just going to seamlessly segue into Joy of the World. This carol is different from many in that it contains overt Christian imagery. Its lyrics originated in the Old Testament as published in Isaac Watts' 1719 translation of the Psalms of David, but it was American composer Lowell Mason who crafted the melody in the 19th century. And then just one that more was, for the people.
Can I just make one joke? I'm sorry.
Yeah,
that
please.
Seems like a DJ Khaled.
Oh, no. Yeah.
You said it was like whoever wrote it, like redid it in the 1700s. That's like DJ Khaled dropping the remix, right? Like re-releasing 1700, boom, New Testament, whatever it was. Just made me laugh.
Doubling down to make extra Skrilla. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Timbaland.
So the very last one I'm going to subject you to really quickly is O Come All Ye Faithful. Englishman John Francis Wade is credited with the words and collaborated with John Reading to give the hymn a melody and published it around 1751. It became popular in church hymn a century later when Frederick Oakley translated it from Latin to English. There you go. It's all my little facts.
I love it. And I love that all of that was so perfect for Gemini. Honestly, like that's amazing. There was so much communication, language, different communities, like so perfect for Gemini. I love it. And thank you, because I didn't know any of that. So fascinating. All right. I am going to get into real quickly. I didn't have a ton of time to do a ton of research on this. And I do want to read the book that I am going to reference in this, but this is just kind of like a quick little rundown of, I was thinking about what to do for the third house for communication. I'm like, oh, what matches up for Christmas with that? So letters to Santa, right?
I love it.
Which, yeah, I love it too, which does have a really interesting history that I didn't really know about.
Do tell.
So, yeah. So they started popping up in a lot of different places. And I'm going to get to the book in one second, but these are just some interesting like little parables about it. So at first, the letters to Santa were letters from Santa that parents would like leave in their kids' stockings as like a, you better watch out. So this image that we have of like kids writing to Santa and Santa responding and granting their presents, not how it started. The earliest Santa picture book shows him leaving behind a letter and a birch rod. Speaking of your birch rod, like hitting
Krampus.
In a naughty child's stocking, which he writes in the letter, "This is for a parent's hand to use when virtue's path his sons refuse." So they started out as like, "Hey kids, you better
check yourself
together
before you wreck yourself.
You better check yourself before you wreck yourself." And then Fanny Longfellow, who was Henry Wad Wadsworth's wife, and Henry Wadsworth was, I think, a big poet back in the day, would write letters every Christmas to the kids that commented on their behavior and how they could improve it. So basically it was like a report card from Santa. It was like, yeah, you were good at the dishes, but you gotta go milk those cows more.
You know what?
It just like really cracked me up.
It was good. Could have been better. B minus.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Next semester, let's work on waking up earlier and keeping your room tidier.
Also, complimenting your mother and making your bed.
Yeah, 100%. Perhaps if you brought your mom breakfast in bed 2 times a week, your presence might be better. And I bet that would have worked. So it's a little like dicey as to how the exact transition from these letters from Santa turning into letters from children to Santa. But this was one of my favorites that I read. It's sad, but it's also kind of funny. This is like one of the most famous in all the books about the letters from Santa, of which there are many. This is one of the most prolific. It was from William Castile Jr. in 1939. Okay. My pals say there is no Santa, but I just have to believe in him. So you're like, So you're like, oh, that's cute. And then this really is sad. The story behind it is his father, a deputy sheriff, was shot and killed by gangsters. But then he adds on to the end of the letter to Santa, my new stepdad is so mean and he never buys me anything. Which, like, maybe the stepdad really was mean, but it could have just been like a stepdad. The kid's like, you know, ugh. But the most intriguing part that I found from this, and there is a whole book on this called The Santa Claus Man, is about how this really became like a cultural thing that was ingrained. Which started as the Santa Claus Association, this is directly from Wikipedia, was founded in December 1913, and it arose as a result of a policy change by the United States Postal Service. Prior to 1911, the post office destroyed letters sent to and addressed to Santa Claus. And not that many people were doing it because postage was expensive, but then in the early 1900s, late 1800s, when the post office became like a real thing and postage went down, parents were like, okay, all right, you can do that. You can send the letters. So all these letters would just be incinerated because obviously they're going nowhere. In 1911, the local postmasters began giving the letters to charity groups in their area instead. In New York City, there were no charity groups willing to participate in this program. Again, Gemini, close community. Then steps in John Gluck, who is this, I think he worked in like trading, some kind of like slick willy kind of a job. Mm-hmm. He reads about this. He contacts Edward Morgan, the postmaster of New York City, with a proposal to set up a non-for-profit organization called the Santa Claus Association, which would receive, verify, and respond to Christmas letters sent by needy children in New York. Gluck, who was born on Christmas Day, was seen as the natural choice for the role. So I'm not going to go through like all the details of this. However, so Gluck sets this up. It becomes this huge thing. It is great in the beginning because kids would write into this association, and then like mm-hmm. Rockefeller, people from the community, yep. everybody would come in and say, all right, give me a letter or give me 10 letters. I'm going to grant these gifts.
Right.
But Gluck was kind of a con man, and he started going to the mayor. He started to try and get all this charity money. He was like, well, we're going to build a Santa Claus building. I need $300,000, which back in the day again, not an exchange expert, but a lot of fucking money to build this. Yeah. So they went through all this, and then the IRS is like, we're going to need to take a look at your records. And he was like, do you really need to do that? They're like, yeah, we really do. And it turns out, I mean, it was good. It was, you know, it's duality. It was good. There was a lot of charity going on, but Gluck was also definitely, was pocketing a lot of the cash. So, this whole book, which again, I haven't read, let me just read a quick little synopsis of it though, because I need to read it. Cause how unhinged does this sound? So this is the quick little summary from the publisher's page. And I really do. I'm going to read this book. Maybe with my new Libby subscription. I did sign up. Before the charismatic John Duval Gluck Jr. came along, letters from New York City children to Santa Claus were destroyed unopened by the U.S. Post Office. Gluck saw an opportunity and created the Santa Claus Association. The effort delighted the public, and for 15 years, money and gifts flowed to the only group authorized to answer Santa's mail. Gluck became a jazz-age celebrity, rubbing shoulders with the era's movie stars and politicians, and even planned to erect a vast Santa Claus monument in the center of Manhattan, until Gotham's crusading charity commissioner discovered some dark secrets in Santa's workshop. And then this is the amazing part. The rise and fall of the Santa Claus Association is a caper both heartwarming and hard-boiled, involving stolen art, phony Boy Scouts, a kidnapping, pursuit by the FBI, a Coney Island bullfight, which I need to know what that's about. And above, I know, as I've been to Coney Island, like, where would the bulls fight? Where did the bulls come from? I don't know. Yeah. And the thrills and dangers of a wild imagination. It's also the larger story of how Christmas became the extravagant holiday we celebrate today, from Santa's early beginnings in New York to the country's first citywide Christmas tree and Macy's grand holiday parade. The Santa Claus Man is a holiday tale filled with a dark underbelly, an essential read for lovers of Christmas stories, true crime, and New York City history. Clearly, I need to read this book. So if anyone wants to dive deeper into this, I'm here for it. So that's my little spiel on Letters to Santa. And I will read this book and come back with more at a later date.
Awesome. Can't wait to see it. So ready to slap a bow on it and talk about my friend. And I'm probably going to pronounce this wrong. Mari Loud or Mary Lude?
Either way. Gemini, the twins' duality. They both work.
So here we go. Around Christmas and New Year's Eve, Welsh families might find themselves challenged by a decorated horse. So there you go. I just want to tell you that this is basically a skeletal horse rap battle between you and Medilla.
My dream.
So, Welsh families might find themselves challenged by the decorated horse or a similar animal skull waiting for them on their doorstep. Adorned in colorful ribbons and bells, the equine image of death has especially ghostly appearance thanks to the white sheet draped over the person carrying it. So it is a horse skull that can do the little kick, 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 because its jaws can slap back together, and they have like a little shawl over it, tons of ribbons and different things on it. It's real silly. So you just kind of like hover it over someone and they do the things and they go down the streets.
Is it like
their little tunes?
Okay, I haven't seen it. Is it like Lisa Frank meets horse skull? Is that how multicolored it is?
It is a horse skull with a shawl and ribbons.
Well, you said multicolored. I thought Lisa Frank, the horses.
I mean, fair enough, but it's just a couple colored ribbons and a horse skull with a shawl thrown over it or sheet or whatever.
I love that you're saying this as if it's like a very pedantic everyday thing. You're like, no, bitch. It's just a horse skull with a shawl.
You literally don't know what the hell you're talking about. Gross.
I don't. But the way, oh my God, the gaslighting continues.
Hello, ho, ho. Do you even know what Mary Loud is? Embarrassing.
I don't. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm Virgoing you. I was imagining it as like as a 90s neon explosion, but now I have a more...
You're giving me way too much credit. It's an ancient custom.
Okay.
I don't want to say ancient. Right. Thousands and thousands of years. Not like last time where I just went off the rails. So,
Why not?
Hoping I am on the right sentence. As revelers sing and parade this head-on stick around the neighborhood, doors open to meet the morbid white horse in battle.
Head-on stick.
Specifically, a battle of wits through poetry. So you're going to rap battle this horse skeleton.
Fuck. Yes.
This is so Gemini. Mari Lute. A midwinter pagan tradition whereby the celebrants earn food and drink only after dominating a poetry slam fronted by a skeletal face. So check yourself before you
see this. This is where I would win. If I had to fight for my food and sustenance by rap battling a horse skull, that I feel confident in. The singing for the food, no. But rap battling a horse skull, yeah, I think I'd fucking crush that. My brain works fast. I think I'd crush it.
I did not expect that.
You did not expect what? That you thought I could beat a horse skull in a rap battle?
Yeah, exactly. Are you serious?
Okay. Okay. Have you ever heard of my, not that you would have, but there's a whole thing I do called Treat and a Beat. And Jenna Fraser gonna tag you in this. She fucking loves when I do it. You just drop a beat. You like do whatever beat you want. I have to be really hammered for it. But then you throw out a treat. You can be like brownie, lobster tail, whatever. And then I immediately freestyle rap about it. It always, always turns sexual. Like immediately. Immediately.
All right. We're going to test this.
But they're actually
posted on the page.
We are, but I'm not drunk
enough.
I got to get, we got to get hammered.
Another time.
No,
I don't. Finish this topic.
Of course.
I will be planning.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I will be planning this. It's going to happen.
Oh, we will do Treat and a Beat. And we got to get Jenna in on it because she loves it. She loves it. But yeah, it's like a prolific thing I do. It's one of my party tricks. It's really good. It always gets, as I said,
it gets the people going.
Quite NC-17 right away. Oh. But yeah, always, always. It always turns sexual. Always. But I mean, what can you do? It's who I am. But yes, I would win this rap battle 110% for sure.
Despite being associated with Christmas, Mary Lud is a pre-Christian practice. In fact, some Welsh regions choose to parade their horse skulls through the town for other holidays such as Halloween or May Day. Though the tradition's exact origins are murky, the image of a white horse has been a powerful symbol for the United Kingdom for at least 3,000 years. The practice also incorporates the centuries-old tradition of wassailing. The Middle English "be in health" is what it means, wassail, was originally a sugared and spiced drink of mulled ale, curdled cream, roasted apples, and eggs. So those who partook in the sharing a huge bowl of this boozy mixture were wassailing. So the term evolved to describe the custom of being for booze around Christmas, a time when poor merrymakers were expected generosities that would usually be denied. They arrived at the doorsteps of the wealthier neighbors to ask for a drink from the wassailing bowl, or have their bowl filled. Modern Welsh wassailing isn't class-based, but the end of the goal remains the same. Wassailers earn an invitation to come in by proving themselves through a back-and-forth rhythmic battle with the residents. Once inside, it's traditional cakes and ale all around. Wassail. And that is the story of Mary Lud. Kate.
This is so dope. I cannot wait to tag Jenna in this. This is literally kind of the story of Treat and a Beat. And I love that it's a thing. I need to make this a part of my Christmas culture. I got to go get a horse skull immediately. It's off to Michael's and the horse farm I go. Like, I need this shit. I need it.
So in the spirit of the holiday season, we're going to wrap it up and say bye to the people, Kate.
Bye.
Merry Christmas!